सहना ववतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः. Very good. Welcome back. We're continuing with all of these wonderful stories in this present chapter, Vrindavana Mahatmyam. We said it was a chapter of transformation stories, one after another after another. And we saw already several. We saw Ugra Tapas, who underwent transformation, was reborn as Sunanda. Then another Rishi, Satya Tapas, who was reborn as Bhadra. Then in the last class we saw Haridhama, who was reborn as Rangaveni. Same pattern that we see again and again is the Rishi. We saw this structure playing out again and again. A Rishi does some very difficult tapas, recites particular mantras, and meditates with a particular image in mind, that dhyana. The term dhyana means meditation in general, but in this context it takes a more specific meaning. Here dhyana means a particular way of envisioning Bhagavan. And, well, actually, we'll talk about it more. There's one section here. We'll elaborate more on that. So particular dhyana is very important in this text. And then we saw the pattern that after so many lifetimes or so many yugas, then they're reborn and reborn into the family of a gopa in Nitya Vrindavana and born as a gopi. And we talked about the symbolism and the significance of the transformation. Rishi the gopi is not only, not just on the surface, Rishi the gopi, but male to female, and a lot of significance with regard to that transformation. We've talked about all this before. So let's return to the story. I thought we would finish the story of Jabali, but we didn't. And it's one of the, in this chapter, it's perhaps the most delightful story. And so it's worth coming back to and spending time. Remember that Jabali was this rishi. He was not just a rishi, but in a funny way, someone I can relate to, because he was a teacher of Vedanta. He taught Brahma Vidya, is what he taught. Wandering through this forest, and he sees this tapaswini, this female ascetic undergoing tapas, sitting at the foot of a tree next to a well. And the well was some very unusual well. Remember something about crystal walls, and just a very unusual sight. Also the fact that this tapaswini was a very attractive young woman, but yet she was engaged in this really very difficult tapas there for years and years, it was apparent. So Jabali got very curious, went to ask, who are you and what's going on here? But she, remember, we joked about it, she remained in meditation. Of course, you want to be polite and not disturb anyone who is meditating, so it's polite, you wait. Like if somebody is sleeping, it's rude to wake them up. If someone's meditating, it's rude to shake them out of their meditation. So Jabali waited patiently for how long? 100 years. Well. So after waiting 100 years, finally, she emerges from meditation, and Jabali finally has a chance to ask. He says, Kasi, who are you? And what are you doing? And where are you going? She introduces herself by saying, I am Brahma Vidya, which is not a normal name for a person, but the symbolism is very obvious. So he, Jabali, as a teacher of Vedanta, seeks what? Seeks Brahma Vidya. He found her. then here, this is very significant. So he asks, you're Brahma Vidya, so why are you here doing this terrible tapas? Why are you here in this scary forest, is how it's described here, this Ghora Vana, this deep, dark jungle. Why are you here? She explained that even though she was so blessed by Brahma Vidya and so full because of that Brahma Vidya, she still felt something lacking. And what she felt lacking specifically was the love of Sri Krishna. And when we discussed it, we observed that Brahma Vidya is primarily an intellectual achievement. Now, that's not to put it down, because the problem that causes human bondage is a problem of our minds. It's a problem of our intellect. Be very clear about it. It is an intellectual problem. The failure to recognize your true nature as Satchidananda Atma, your mistaken assumption that by running around in the world and by getting things outside, you can gain happiness and contentment, all of these errors are located in your intellect, nowhere else. The problem of life, that the source of suffering is an intellectual problem, therefore the solution ultimately is an intellectual solution, Brahma Vidya. But, oh, that's introduction for the but. And the but is that it fails to address us emotionally. And emotions have their own level of reality, shall we say. Emotions have their own realm, have their own, what word am I looking for? Emotions have their own status. And it's true that a Brahmajnani, an enlightened person, could ignore emotions. Just like a Brahmajnani could ignore being hungry and thirsty. True, a Brahmajnani could ignore being hungry and thirsty and sit there and meditate and die. But generally, that's not what happens. Generally, when you're hungry, you eat. When you're thirsty, you sleep. So the Brahmajnani would respond in a very natural way to hunger and thirst. In the same way, emotional needs are a normal part of the human condition, just as a need for food and drink is normal. Emotional needs are normal. If this Brahmajnani happens to be a sannyasi, well, that sannyasi now is not going to meet their emotional needs through family and friends, which is what's conventionally done. So what will that Brahmajnani do for the sake of emotional health? Could I use that word? For the sake of meeting normal emotional needs. A normal emotional need for intimacy. We had some discussion about that in the last class. Well, that's what this whole story is about, and that is that this Tapaswini Brahma Vidya said that even though I have found even though I am a Brahmajnani, she said, even then I don't feel emotionally fulfilled because I'm missing the sense of intimacy with Sri Krishna. Therefore, she was meditating and meditating for the sake of having darshan of Sri Krishna. And the message then of this whole transformation story is that Brahma Vidya gives you moksha, absolutely gives you moksha. But can a mukta purusha, can a person who's free, can they get hungry? Yeah. Can they get thirsty? Yes. And when hungry or thirsty, they would probably get something to eat or drink. And in the same way, can that Brahmajnani feel a need for emotional intimacy? Absolutely. Normal human needs. Significance here, though, is that the Brahmajnani, instead of running out and getting, who's going to marry that person anyway? You can't say, oh, they'll go out and get married. The whole idea is that once somebody's lived that kind of lifestyle, kind of makes them a poor candidate for getting married. So that's no longer an option. But the need for emotional intimacy is there. So this text, this section of the text, very nicely steers Jabali then towards a path of devotional meditation to cultivate this sense of intimacy with Sri Krishna. And to this end, Brahma Vidya, the Tapaswini, gives Jabali instructions on how to meditate and gives him a mantra. We saw that in the last class. So he's been given a mantra by the Tapaswini, and he now begins his meditation. That's where we left off at the last class. So now we're going to see his meditation. Last quick comment here. I mentioned that I find some affinity with this character Jabali, teacher of Brahma Vidya, and also as one who's noticed the need for emotional intimacy. I told the story about living absolutely alone that 1 month retreat. I felt lonely. To go weeks at a time without really seeing anyone, without talking to anyone, is not an ordinary thing, and I found it not particularly comfortable. I have normal emotional needs. And just as Jabali found a solution when he met this Brahma Vidya, over the years I have found a lot of that need for emotional intimacy met through cultivation of prayer life, in prayer and puja and meditation. Especially in meditation, that sense of intimacy is met, not intimacy with a human being, but in a sense of intimate relationship, closeness to Bhagavan. And that's been important for me personally, sustains me. So interesting for me to see this passage, because I feel a particular affinity to this Jabali. All right. So, with that introduction, we'll return to the text, where Jabali, having been given this mantra by the Tapaswini, now Jabali begins his meditation. And the section we begin with is what I called before the dhyana, the imagery. Again, dhyana means meditation in general, but in this context, it has a more specific meaning. Dhyana representing the imagery with which we conceive of Bhagavan, in this case Sri Krishna. And we resume, this is the second half of 37. Dhadya parama bhavena Krishna Krishna mananda rupinam. So who did he meditate on? Dadhyao. He meditated parama bhavena. With full heart, he meditated, of course, on Krishnam. On what form of Krishna? Ananda rupinam. On Sri Krishna as an embodiment of ananda. Now, and now the imagery is now described. Charantam vraja vitishu Vichitra gati lilaya. So Sri Krishna, charantam, is wandering around vraja vitishu, around the paths of Nitya Vrindavana. And as he's wandering, you could walk like very heavily, and like you know how people walk differently depending on their mood. Sometimes if you feel the weight of the world on your shoulders, you're hunched over, your head is down, and you're walking slowly. But here Sri Krishna is described as chitra gati lilaya, walking with a playful gait. He's kind of dancing down the path. Lalitai pada vinyasaihi kwanayantam chanupuram. And of course, as he dances down the path, he apparently wears the nupuram, the what do you call them? The pile. That's a more common word. Good word. Nice name. So Sri Krishna wears these piles, and as he is dancing down the road, they make this nice tinkling sound. All part of the imagery. Of course, the imagery is not just visual. It's the sound and the feelings and the smells, the whole setting is important. Chitra kandarpa cheshtabihi sasmita panga vikshitaihi. So his cheshta, his movements, his playful behavior is such, and that such that his smita apanga vikshitaihi, he appears to have very playful eyes, smiling eyes, smiling face, playful behavior. Now his flute. Someone mentioned before that the flute was absent in the earlier part of the text. Now we get some special attention to his flute. Sammohanakya yavamsya panchamaruna chitraya. So the flute is even named Sammohana. Sammohana, that which delights you, is the name of the flute, as Vamshi, his flute. And as he plays it, Panchama Aruna Chitraya, it reaches the Panchama. What is the Panchama? This one. That's the Panchama. And it's, that's like a very dramatic note. In music, it's a very strong note, a very fundamental note, like the sa. But it's, you know, sa is, you hear sa all the time, sa 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 sa. But when you get to that pa, pa, that's a very powerful, exciting note. So with his flute, he reaches up to pa. Bimbaushtaputa chumban chumbinya. Kala la parmanugnaya. And his flute is pressed to his lips, bimbaushta. And the terminology is cute. It's almost as though he's kissing his flute. So I could imagine the gopis are jealous of the flute. In another text, the gopis are jealous of the ground on which he walks. So if the gopis are going to be jealous of the ground on which he walks, think of their jealousy of the flute. He is kissing the flute all the time. Harantam vraja ramanam. Manansi chavapum shicha. So Sri Krishna harantam steals away vraja ramanam, the delightful ladies of the lovely ones of Vrindavana. He steals them away. What is he stealing away? Manansi, their minds. And not just their minds, vapumshicha, and also their very bodies. He steals them away, which is to say, when he wanders down the path with his playful gait and his playful eyes, his playful behavior, playing his flute, some mohana, and delighting all the girls, they find it irresistible. And that really is the central imagery associated with Sri Krishna, the whole portrayal of him in this Kishora Avastha, as that teenager with the flute and all of this, it's giving an image of someone so attractive that you can't resist, you can't hold back. And this is the imagery of Bhagavan, an image so appealing, so attractive, that we're drawn. You just can't resist. And as we observed quite a while ago, the very name, Krishna, obviously it's got the direct meaning of the dark one, but the more interesting meaning, Karshati, that which draws, that which attracts, the attractive one. Shlatati, shlat, huh? Shlatani vibhiragatya sahasalingitangakam shlatani vibhi. The gopis that he's stealing away accompany him with shlatana, falling away, referring to their clothes. They're running so quickly that their clothes start to fall, yes, like falling off the shoulder. So the clothes are starting to fall loosely a little bit as they're running after him. Agatya, having come towards Sri Krishna. And sahasa, very suddenly, alingita angakam. Alingita angakam. They embrace his limbs. They embrace him very suddenly. So you get the image now of this incredibly attractive being walking down the path. The gopis finding it so attractive they can't resist. And can't resist means they, pardon me for putting it in these terms, they attack him. They catch him, they embrace him. This is the imagery. Divya malyam baradharam, divya gandhanulepanam. So he's wearing divine mala, divine garland. He has divine, the sandalwood that he wears has a divine scent, divya gandha. By the way, we're going to see some more symbolism with that fragrant scent. So put that in the back of your mind. We'll see that in a few minutes. Shyamalanga prabhapurnaihi mohayantam jagatrayam. Shyamala Anga, the one whose limbs are dark, with the dark one, but even though he's dark, he is Prabha Purna. He's full of light. You know, generally, dark means no light. He's a dark one, that which is to say, the skin is dark in color, but he is full of light. Radiant is a nice English word for it. And so radiant, so dark and so radiant, that mohayantam, he delights jagatrayam, the three worlds. He entrances the three worlds. So, okay, now this concludes the dhyana, the imagery. Notice the intensity of the portrayal. It doesn't just say, oh, bahut sundar. Not like that. It just anything is beautiful, but it goes on and quite some detail about how he behaves, how his eyes dart around, how his skin is dark and shiny, how these gopis are so moved by the attractiveness that they can't restrain themselves, how they run after him and they grab him. It's a very powerful portrayal, and this dhyana, this is the dhyana, the meditation, the imagery being used by our rishi Jabali. But the reason, of course, it's being told in this Padma Purana is to give us fuel, so to speak, for our own meditation. And that is, for the sake of developing that sense of intimacy in meditation, you need some very vivid imagery to evoke our emotions. Emotions are evoked by... What is it that evokes emotions? Does tedious Sanskrit prose evoke emotions? Do heavy Vedantic texts evoke emotions? Not commonly. But things that do evoke our emotions, interesting. A simple flower can evoke emotions. Why? Beauty, color, fragrance. It appeals to the senses. Emotions, it turns out, are more closely connected to our senses, sight, hearing, taste, touch, and smell. So when the imagery is very rich with color, with form, with fragrance, with all of the senses involved, that richness then is helpful in evoking an emotional response at the time of meditation. So the dhyanas that are given in this chapter, and there's one after another for every rishi meditating, has a different kind of imagery that's used. So later you'll see one that envisions Sri Krishna to be golden in color. This one is shyamala, is dark. So later, another rishi will meditate on him with a golden hue. Everyone has a different approach, and all of these are told to us so that we can incorporate them. One more nice connection here. You've heard me speak in other contexts about one of the uniquenesses of the Hindu tradition is the fact that there's no one way to do anything. The plurality of ways in which we envision Bhagavan is something unique, truly unique to the Hindu tradition. Most other traditions give you one name, one form, one style of prayer, one ritual, and that's all the religion offers. How unique it is of this tradition to give us so many different images and approaches and names and forms and deities. All of this is, as you've heard me discuss before, to accommodate our individual orientations. We all have different leanings, different things that we like, different things excite us, interest us, draw our attention. So in this chapter, we're going to see so many different portrayals, the idea being that you can find, amongst all of these portrayals, you can find some imagery that's particularly meaningful for you. That's the goal in going through a chapter like this, is to find things that you personally relate to. And this is the importance then of the dhyana, of the meditation imagery. All right. Now we can continue and see what happens as the Rishi Jabali meditates. Sahevam Bahudevena Samupasya Jagatpatim. Evam, thus, sa upasya, he, the rishi, meditates thus, on whom Jagatpatim, on the master of the cosmos, Sri Krishna, Bahudevena, along with so many other gods. So even further, look at this. Even a text on Sri Krishna doesn't say you should not worship any other deity. This kind of narrowness drives me nuts. And most other religions are really stuck. Christians are forbidden to worship God with any other name or form other than Jesus. Jews are forbidden, a Jew can't worship Jesus. Malaysia or someplace where there's a big to-do because in this country it's illegal for non-Muslims to refer to God as Allah. For a non-Muslim to use the word Allah in addressing God is wrong. I don't get it. I just don't get it. But look, even here in this text, that text which is focused on devotion to Sri Krishna, says that Jabali is meditating on many gods. Hey, more the merrier. Okay. Then what? So He goes on meditating then. Navakalpantare chata gokule divyarupini. So he has to wait a long time meditating. Never. nine kalpas. So after nine cycles of creation, he is jata, born. Born where? Gokule. In Gokul, in Nitya Vrindavana. Obviously it can't be the physical place, because nine kalpas. Who knows what exists after nine kalpas? And of course, he's born once again, Divya Rupini, and all in Stri Linga, in feminine gender, Chata. She is born, Divya Rupini, as one who has a beautiful form. So reborn as in a female form. And now that female form is described. Kanya prachanda namnastu gopasyati yashaswinaha. So born as the kanya, as a daughter. As a daughter of who? Gopasya, of a particular gopa. What gopa? Prachanda namnaha. The one whose name, a gopa named Prachanda. Born as a daughter of Prachanda, and the gopa Prachanda is Ati Yashaswinaha. He is very famous, very well known, very highly respected. So born as a daughter of a highly respected gopa. Chitra Gandheti Vikhyata Kumari Chashubhanana. So what is her name? His name. Father's name is Prachanda. Her name, that is Jabali, reborn as a gopi. His name, or her name now, is Chitragandha. We said fragrance, symbolism. So Chitragandha means one whose fragrance is delightful. Chitra here means delightful. So, and she is Vikhyata, famous, well known by the name Chitragandha, and probably well known for her fragrance. Just like some woman might always use the same perfume, and everyone will know that woman by the by the perfume she wears. So this Chitragandha is known, what do they say, when she walks into the room, you know she's entered with before you turn around and see her. She is known by her gandha, by her fragrance. And she's Kumari, a young girl. They're all in this Kaumara Avastha, this teenage years. And she is, of course, Shubha Anana, with a very beautiful face. Very, very pretty girl. Nichanga Gandhar Vividhaihi Modayanti Dishodasha. This explains why she's so well known, because Nija Anga Gandhaihi, each of her own limbs is fragrant. Vividhaihi Gandhaihi, with varieties of delightful fragrances, all of her limbs, and with all of these fragrances, Modayanti, she delights. Disho dasha, the 10 directions. 10? Her fragrance goes in 10 different directions. So you got the 4 main directions, the 4 subsidiary directions, up and down. Her fragrance just spreads out everywhere, just like that lady who wears too much perfume. This is what makes her so delightful, Chitragandha. Tame nam pasya kalyanim vrindasho madhupayanim. Remember, this is narrated by Lord Shiva to Parvati. So here Lord Shiva says, Maheshwara, pasya, dekho. Look here, Parvati. Tam Enam. Look at this one, Kalyanim, this blessed girl. Look at her. Vrindashaha Madhupayanim. This blessed girl, beautiful language, who drinks in the sweetness of Vrindavana. A nice language. This girl who drinks in the sweetness, blessed girl who drinks in the sweetness of Vrindavana. Angeshu swapatim kritva rasa vesha samakulam. So, talking now, this Chitragandha, nine yugas in the future, reborn in Nitya Vrindavana. And what is she going to do there? Angeshu, with her limbs, Swapatim, her master, Sri Krishna, she kritva, she embraces. Angeshu kritva, she embraces Sri Krishna. How? Rasa avesha samakulam. With so much passion and intensity, she embraces her beloved. Imagine being separated from your beloved for Neva Yuga. That's how long he's been waiting. So having waited nine kalpas and finally being united with one's beloved, so you can imagine the intensity of that union. Asya stana parishwange harai sarvar vihanyate vakshasthalat prachavyat bhihi Chitragandhari Saurabhaihi. And it uses some very passionate language here. The necklace she wears is as falling upon her breasts. This is the language it uses. It's kind of intentionally suggestive language. The necklace she wears falls upon her breasts again and again, and in that, from the area of her breasts, Vakshasthala, from that area also comes this sweet fragrance because of the necklace hanging there on her breasts. Hanging there on her breast as she embraces Sri Krishna. It's intentionally suggestive language. So they're describing a passionate embrace. This is a dhyana. This is very powerful imagery. And this concludes the story of Jabali. Just a few comments before we continue. So here was a great teacher of Brahma Vidya, who in prior life is this great, he was a teacher. He was described as one who imparted Brahma Vidya to others. And after this amazing transformation, now he's become a gopi, passionately embracing Sri Krishna. This is an incredibly radical transformation. Now, the implication is, he now has both. With Brahma Vidya that he had before, he was already mukta. He already gained moksha. He was already full and complete. Already, I guess, free from reincarnation, if that indeed is a goal. Free from being ruled by desire. Utterly content. Now, utterly content, yet emotional needs have their own reality. And we'll come back to this just this one last time, because it sounds mutually contradictory. If you can be utterly content, how can you still have emotional needs? That's why I've used the same metaphor several times. What about that Brahmajnani who's thirsty? They're content. Means if they don't get water, they're not going to go on complaining about it. Okay, I get no water. But if you offer this Brahmajnani a glass of water, do you think he's going to say, no, I don't need it, I'm full and complete and content? The body needs, craves water. It's natural to take water, so he takes water. Well, as I discussed in the last class and in the introduction here, just as the need for water and food are normal human needs, a need for emotional intimacy is no different. It's a normal human need. And if that need were not fulfilled, Jabali would be just fine. But he was offered a way to fulfill that need for emotional intimacy. And what did he do for the sake of fulfilling that need? Well, first he had to wait 100 years just to get the mantra. After waiting 100 years for the mantra, then he apparently meditated 9 yugas to finally reach his beloved. That shows how motivated he was for the sake of fulfilling that normal emotional need. Again, it's not that his enlightenment had any shortcomings, but rather that the value of fulfilling that emotion, that normal human emotional need, and fulfilling it with Sri Krishna is held by this text to be so valuable, it's worth this kind of investment of effort. What effort was invested? Waiting 100 years just for the mantra. All right. In this chapter, there's just two very elaborate stories. We just saw the story of Jabali. We'll see later one more fairly elaborate story. In the meanwhile, we have lots of short ones. We're going to start skipping over some of it, but let's just see the next passage verse by verse, and then we'll start to skip ahead. We'll see the next part verse by verse, just because it really gives you the gut feeling for what most of the rest of the chapter is about. So we got stories now of several rishis. We have the Satya Tapas, we had Ugra Tapas, we had Haridhama and Jabali. There must be other sages, you bet. We're going to get some of their stories now. Apare muni varayastu satatam puta manasaha. There are certainly apare munihi. There are other great rishis, in addition to the ones that we've just talked about, who are satatam puta manasaha, who are always engaged in purifying their minds, and vayu bhakshastapas te puhu japantah paramam manum. Tapas. What is their tapas? This is tapas te puhu. There's that expression, again, I joked about it maybe in Mahabharata class, where there's a verb to do tapas in Sanskrit. I think it was Mahabharata class I taught. Was it here? So you have a problem. When the object is tapas and the verb is tapas, how do you translate it into English? What it is here is tapas te puhu. We would translate it as they did tapas, but the verb is to do tapas, so you should say they tupped tapas. That's the only way to translate it literally. They did tapas. What was their tapas? Well, they were vayu bhakshak. they lived eating air. I guess they didn't have to worry about putting on weight. Low calorie diet. So they ate air. And of course, they japantaha. They were engaged in doing japa. And they did japa of paramam manum, a very powerful mantra they recited. Smara Krishnaya Kamarti Kaladi Vritti Shalini. So as they did their japa, reciting mantra, mantra will be described in a moment, they went on also smaraha, it, with remembrance, Krishnaya, directed towards Sri Krishna. Sri Krishna, who is Kamarti Kaladi Vritti Shalini, Sri Krishna, who's endowed with this skill of invoking intense attraction. Kamarti Kaladi Vritti Shalini, unto that one, in remembrance of that one who is very skillful in drawing our minds and hearts. Agneyi Sahitam Kritva Mantram Panchadashaksharam. So they're engaged in japa of a mantra which is Panchadashaksharam, a 15 syllable mantra which includes Agneyi, a bijakshara associated with Agni. Ram, I think, but I'd have to check on that. In Tantrika scriptures, these are given in great detail. Every bijakshara is connected with a particular element, and I don't remember a lot of them. So these rishis reciting mantras, and Dadhyur Munivara Krishna Murtim Divya Vibhushanam. So same pattern. They do tapas, they recite a mantra, and now dhyana. They meditate on Sri Krishna with a particular image in mind. Dadhyuhu Muni Varaha. These great rishis meditated on Krishna Murtim, on Sri Krishna's form. What kind of form? Divya Vibhushanam. Oh, I forgot. I forgot to talk about fragrance before. Anyway, let me complete the story and we'll come back to that. The symbolism of the fragrance is a little bit more to say. We'll come back to it though. So these rishis are meditating on Sri Krishna, whose form is glorious and divine. Divya Chitra Dukulena Purna Pinakati Sthalam. This really stretches your vocabulary, because this is used to describe the person's appearance and dress. Dukula is some kind of silken garment. I'm not sure if it's like a angavastra dupatta, some kind, usually made of silk, fairly long, called dukula. I had to look that up. That's why I'm making a point here. So he's wearing a divine and colorful angavastra, we'll call it, cloth, and which covers his broad chest. This is the description, of course, of Sri Krishna that the rishis are meditating on. Mayura pitcha kaira klipta chudam ujjwala kundalam. So of course, Mayura pitchaka, he has the chuda, a crown, with the peacock feathers coming out of the top of the crown, and ujjwala kundalam, he has bright earrings. Savya janghanta adaya dakshinam charanam bhujam. This is interesting. Savya jangha anta adaya dakshinam Chara Ambujam. The Adaya Savyajanganta, upon the left calf, I guess that's the English word. Here. Janga is the word here. So upon the left calf, the Dakshina Chara, the right foot, has been brought to rest. This is that common. You've seen this so many times. I have to demonstrate, otherwise it won't make any sense. It's this that you've seen so many times. So the right foot is brought to rest on the left. I'm going to fall over and do that. He doesn't fall over. So this is the posture in which we're accustomed to seeing Sri Krishna. I've mentioned before that all the when you see any picture or sculpture of Sri Krishna, you can see where the artists get their inspiration. It's all here in the texts, every little detail. And if you wonder then why all the depictions aren't the same, because they vary quite a bit. And they vary quite a bit because because these written descriptions actually vary quite a bit. So based on various descriptions, artists will pick and choose different things and then represent. Of course, there are some non-traditional representations as well. Artists just do because they think it's cute. For example, I haven't researched this, but I'm pretty sure there's no text that describes coins flowing out of Lakshmi's hand. I doubt it very much. So this is some artist that gets a clever way of showing something, and this is anyway. All right, let's finish this passage. So the imagery of Sri Krishna, who has his legs crossed and he has that posture. Brahmantim saputi kritya charu hastam bhujadvayam. He's wandering around bibhratim, brahmantim, and he has samsputi krita charu hasta ambuja dvayam. Complicated language. What it means is that his holy hands, his lotus hands, not just lotus feet, you get that expression all the time, not just lotus feet, lotus eyes, lotus hands. So his lotus hands are samputi kritya. They're brought together. Now, think he's wandering around with his hands brought together. How are they brought together? Not like this. Unlikely. But maybe, I don't know, sometimes the hands are clasped behind. I'm not sure if that would be, what would be, or maybe some seductive way. I don't. Somehow, the hands are clasped in some kind of attractive way. I can imagine kind of wandering with your hands clasped at your back. It has that very casual kind of look to it. Then, Kaccha desha vinikshipta renum parichalat patim. So, if his hands are clasped, where is his venu? So at this moment, he can't be playing it. If your hands are clasped, you can't. So where is it? Kaksha Desha. At the it's tucked in. He's got that flute tucked in. Tucked in his waistband. At the Kaksha Desha, at the end of the of his cloth, at the waist. Anandayantim gopinam nayanani manansicha. And with this kind of appearance, Anandayanti, he delights Gopinam. He is a delight of all the gopis, and a delight for their nayanani, for their eyes, and manansi, and their minds. So for the eyes and minds of all the gopis, he is a delight. Paramacharya rupena pravrishtaranga mandape prasuna varsha gopi bihi puryamanam cha sarvatah. I have to take those two lines together. So with this Parama Ashcharya Rupena, with this incredibly beautiful form, he pravishta, he enters into a Ranga Mandapam, into a special hall. Now, Mandapa, if we're in Vrindavana, that Mandapa could be a bower. It could be underneath a tree or in an area outside. It need not be in a particular building. So, but it's some very special place he enters into. He enters into it, and having entered into it, prasuna varsha gopi bihi, he's accompanied by gopis who are showering him. Prasuna varsha, they're showering him with flowers, flower petals. He's being showered puryamanam. He's just sarvataha, all over. He's just being showered with flower petals as he enters into this special mandapa. Okay, this then is the another dhyana. So you see, different from the one before. Everyone is a little different. Everyone then is meant to give us ideas, fuel, as I called it, for one's own meditation. Okay, we'll finish with these other sages. Ata kalpantare deham tyaktva jata hihadhuna. Ata, then, kalpantare, after a whole kalpa has elapsed, deham tyaktva, having given up their bodies. What about these other rishis? Jata, they are reborn. And again in Strilinga, in feminine gender, they're reborn where? Iha, here in Nitya Vrindavana, Adhuna, of today. They're born here and now in Vrindavana. And how are they born? Yasam karneshu drishyante tatakarashmidipitaha. So for them, yasam, for these rishis, now reborn as gopis, karneshu drishyante, at their ears you can see tatanka, okay, tatanka, strange words. Believe it or not, there are different words for earrings. So kundala can be a generic word for earring, but if you want to talk about a large earring that would only be worn by women, tatanka, this word. My vocabulary is getting expanded as I prepare these classes. When are you going to come across these words in the Vedantic text? Never. Okay. And so they have large earrings which are rashmi deepi taha, which are shining golden. And ratna malyani kanteshu ratna pushpani venishu. They have jeweled necklaces around their necks. Remember, these are the rishis. The rishis now have beautiful shiny earrings, they have beautiful necklaces, and they have ratna and pushpa, they have gems and flowers in their veni, their braids. So they're described as beautiful girls once again. So here we get more transformation stories. I think we'll start to now summarize some of these transformation stories, because you can see they're all playing out the same pattern. The Rishi does tapas, undergoes, takes up a mantra, meditates on Sri Krishna with certain imagery, and finally is reborn as a gopi. Yes? The mantras are hinted at, but not given in sufficient detail. The one mantra that is not just hinted at, but given in sufficient detail, is the one given at the very end of the text. And that's the mantra that we chant here. The other mantras are hinted at. That mantra is given incomplete. And even when that mantra is given, it's not spelled out. It's kind of given in a code language. You have to figure out the mantra. We'll come to that that later. All of these mantras are just hinted at. The prior one for Jabali was said to be Panchadashakshara. Had 15 syllables, and one of the syllables was a Bijakshara associated with Agni. That's all they tell you. And that's not enough information, of course, to figure out the mantra. That's done deliberately. Of course, if you're thinking, is there really that mantra or not, it kind of doesn't make any difference. These are stories, so it's meant to sound very mystical. Now, just a few comments, and then we'll begin our meditation. All through, the imagery is meant to make something very concrete. Something about images and places where it becomes something is very concrete, very tangible. It enhances meditation tremendously. For example, when you go and sit in the same place every day for meditation, the various objects around you or on the altar are very important to your meditation. Imagine if you sat in front of an altar every day for meditation, and one day somebody moved everything around on that altar. Before you meditated, you would put everything back to where it was, because it becomes something important for your meditation. Well, that setting on the altar can be one inside. That is, it need not be a physical altar. It can be a mental setting. A mental setting in which two important things are present in that setting. Pardon me. One, obviously, is Bhagavan. And need not even be Sri Krishna, but obviously this text is all devoted to Sri Krishna. So we'll just take that as an example. So one thing that's present in that setting is Sri Krishna, but Sri Krishna with as much detail as possible. Look how much detail is given in this text. Make it concrete, make it real, put colors and trees or whatever it is, make it vivid is the message of this text. I said two things present. One is Sri Krishna. The other is you in this meditation. You project yourself into that scene. That's what all of this is about. That's the symbolism of the transformation. When they're reborn as a gopi, then they are in the physical presence of Sri Krishna. The whole symbolism. The rishis undergo transformation so that they can be reborn in such a way that they can be in the physical presence of Sri Krishna. So for us, our meditation is that forest of transformation. These rishis are getting transformed in this forest, in Vrindavana, Nitya Vrindavana. We get transformed, so to speak, in the forest of meditation. And in that context, there's an opportunity for that closeness, intimacy with Sri Krishna. So in the meditation, Sri Krishna is present there, and you project yourself into them. Okay, let's we're getting, that's all being redone. It's kind of torn apart now, but you will be so delighted when you see how it comes up. All right, let's get ready here. Thank you. Mentioned briefly.